1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Well, it's a month after that toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, and now another Norfolk Southern train derailed Saturday, just 200 miles from the East Palestine disaster site, same state. No toxic spill this time, but it's putting a renewed focus on rail safety. Ohio Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown on ABC's This Week.
When you lay off a third of the workforce, you clearly are compromising the work that those workers do, and they simply can't keep up with the safety inspections.
Ukrainian forces in the key eastern city of Bakhmut now said to be vulnerable to Russian attacks on three sides. The chief of the Wagner Group calling on Ukrainian President Zelensky to abandon the city. Tens of thousands of Israelis took to the streets Saturday protesting against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's planned judicial reform, but opponents fear would weaken the Supreme Court there and limit judicial powers. Former Maryland Governor Larry Hogan announcing he won't run for the 2024 GOP presidential race, saying he didn't want to have a pileup of candidates running. This is ABC News. A passenger on a private jet has died from injuries sustained during severe turbulence. ABC's Rena Roy has more.
The NTSB investigating a rare incident of fatal turbulence. A passenger on a private business jet killed.
The Bombardier Challenger 300 jet departing from Keene, New Hampshire Friday afternoon with three passengers and two crew members on board en route to Leesburg, Virginia. Around 4 p.m. local time, diverting to Bradley Airport in Connecticut for a medical emergency after experiencing severe turbulence. The NTSB now interviewing those who survived and analyzing the jet's cockpit recorders to figure out how this happened.
And amid several high-profile near misses reported at U.S. airports in places like New York and Austin over the last several months, Republican lawmakers grilled President Biden's current FAA acting administrator Billy Nolen over what they say is a lack of his aviation safety experience during a hearing with the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation last week. Dave Packer, ABC News.
From Green Bay to Oshkosh and Point South, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Hearings are underway on the 2023 Farm Bill. A Senate hearing on Wednesday focused on preserving wildlife and climate. More from Eric Tigadoff.
According to defenders of wildlife, more than 70% of species listed under the Endangered Species Act rely on private lands. More than 40% of private land in the lower 48 states is managed for agriculture. The group's senior analyst for private lands, Mary Fafko, says the bill is an opportunity to combat the linked issues of biodiversity loss and climate change.
Farmers, ranchers, and producers play a critical role in conserving our nation's wildlife. With so many of our nation's imperiled species occurring on private lands, depending on private lands, they depend on this farm bill.
Fafko says defenders of wildlife's recommendations for the Farm Bill include incentivizing projects with co-benefits for climate and wildlife and providing national-level funding for all working lands for wildlife initiatives. Christine Ackland is the Northern Rockies senior attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity. She says the last Farm Bill also included exclusions for some timber sales from analyses on their environmental impact. She says taking away this exclusion would help protect diverse habitats.
That allows the public to be involved in that process to ensure that these projects aren't completely irreparably damaging important ecosystems across the country.
The current Farm Bill from 2018 expires on September 30th. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Warning, listening to the devil's advocates may expose you to opposing views.
It's scary. Maybe I'm coming a little bit more over the left, but...
Well, it's not left, it's good governance, Steve.
It's good to be exposed to different ideas, and I do appreciate that you do put that out there on the airways, because a lot of times where you just get a little sound bite of this or a little bit of that, and that's the end of it. You're to be commended for that.
Dave, I'm glad you finally come around to commending the greatest radio show ever, man.
Follow the devil's advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained, this is Civic Media.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hey, folks, how we doing? We got a special episode of the Cripescast this week where I'm talking to a bunch of different bands that were at Joey Song in Madison. Now, Joey Song is a benefit concert I was performing at recently. It raises a bunch of money for childhood epilepsy. And at this year's benefit, I had sort of my green room, and I just kind of had a rotating door of musicians and artists that were coming through, talking about the benefit, talking about their careers. So today, you know, it's kind of a bit of a compilation. I've got five different interviews blended into this episode. Think of today's episode like a seven-layer dip, okay? You know, you're like, huh, I didn't know you could put that in there, but pretty good. So anyways, here's the lineup of the guests I got. First, I'm talking with the creator of Joey Song, Mike Gamal. Then I got to talk to John and Eric and Kyle from Portugal the Man. And after that, I chat with Dave Perner of Soul Asylum, Chris Collinwood of Fountains of Wayne, and Miles Nielsen, the lead singer of Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. It's a jam-packed episode, folks. So, was that a pun, Charlie? Jam? Real good. Anyways, let's get into it. First up is the creator of Joey Song, Mike Gamal. Now, Mike's son Joe was the inspiration for the benefit, and Mike gets into how Joey Song has evolved over the years and his plans for where he wants to take it. Instead of me rambling on with more, here is my conversation with Mike. I know you've done this a million times.
A million times.
Walk us through the inspiration behind Joey's song.
Sure, man. So my son Joe had epilepsy. First had his first seizure when he was about 6 months old. And and unfortunately, the epilepsy that Joe was diagnosed with was a really heinous form of it called Dravet syndrome. So Joe's prognosis was not very good. And we lost Joe just short of his fifth birthday. And even when Joe was still alive, I had thought about trying to do something to help other people because I knew his prognosis wasn't good, but you know, we're Wisconsin folks. You try to help your neighbor, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what you do. That's what we're taught to do. So I had thought about it. And back millions of years ago, I worked at a club in Madison called Headliners in Church Key, which was a big music venue back in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I had some connection. And one of those connections was Butch Vig, who was kicking around in Spooner at the time. But we originally started with doing CDs. But if you'll recall, about 2010, which is when Joe died, is when the world decided to stop buying CDs and only stream. So, but we would always hold a CD release party, and it turned into this live event that we have today. But it basically was, I lost my son to epilepsy. At the time, there was no real treatments for the kind that he had, and I found out afterwards there's lots of other kids. Some pediatric epilepsies are just untreatable. They call them intractable epilepsies.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to do something, right? I needed to turn the crap that we went through and try to prevent other families from going through it. And that's behind it. And then Butch and I hooked up and it's turned into this thing that it is now.
Super cool. It's at Sylvie this year. There's a ton of great acts. And,
awesome.
And you guys do such an amazing job, you know, with all the artists you bring in. Just, I mean, we had such a great meal last night,
great.
You know, and, but it's such a cool vibe. And, you know, this, epilepsy, obviously, it's one of those things that people may know of, but it's not like, you know, breast cancer. And it's kind of interesting how these, you know, the story you tell around a disease is can oftentimes make or break how long that disease is going to be around and how bad it's going to be. So, I mean, it's so cool that you've developed this story around Joey's song and what you've done. I mean, this whole concert, in my mind, is like storytelling.
Yeah, it is.
And people are, you know, ready to give money. And so, I mean, props to you. That's amazing.
Thanks, you know, it's interesting that you say that about epilepsy is so misunderstood, right? Mm-hmm. Because many disabilities you can see, right? If somebody's crippled or any of the other things that they can be, you recognize that. But epilepsy, you can't tell somebody has epilepsy by looking at them. Mm-hmm. And then how it manifests itself, you know, seizures, if anybody's ever seen a seizure, they're scary, right?
Yeah.
And they manifest themselves in a bunch of different ways. So there's always been a stigma attached to epilepsy, which most people that have it prefer not to talk about, you know, that's they don't talk about it. And then the other part of it is epilepsy is like some diseases, like a spectrum disease.
Right.
You know, there's tons of different causes and there's tons of different ways it manifests itself. Whether it's, you know, the shaking that people think of. Some people have what they call absent seizures and they just stare. There's a lot of kids in school that are really having seizures, but the teacher thinks, you know, little Billy's spacing out over there.
Mm.
So it's kind of a hidden ailment as well, which is why doing what we do, I think, is important. And not to sprain my elbow patting myself on the back, but by having folks like you and Garbage and Soul Asylum and Portugal the Man and Fountains Away and Play Our Thing, I get a lot of people in the door because they want to see the acts, don't know about it, and they're going to get an education tonight. Right. As you've seen walking around the venue, we got signs explaining epilepsy. There's going to be one of the doctors that receives our research grant is going to come and talk for a little bit. So if you want to see Charlie Behrens do his comedy or watch Butch Vig play drums or watch the Nielsen Trust play Cheap Trick songs, we're going to make you learn a little bit about epilepsy as well. So it's kind of sneaky.
Yeah, well, you know, it's fishing. It's fishing. Do you think the walleye likes the hook? Or does he like the leech on the hook?
Yeah,
you know, or she.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Or if you're using crankbaits, you know, I mean.
But that's a spectrum as well.
Right? Exactly. And you're a Midwest guy through and through.
Yep.
And and the music biz, you were in Madison during such a cool time.
Oh, man.
I mean, what was that like?
Madison used to, it's vibrant now, but back in the 80s, we had so many clubs. I worked at Headliners, but we had Merlin's, and we had OK's Corral, and we had all these clubs, and there were bands like Spooner, which Butch and Duke came out of, you know, and we had just this rich pool. Ben Sidran was kicking around. The Cheap Trick guys were playing, you know, dates around here. And then the whole Midwest scene, right? You had the Replacements up in Minnesota. You had Soul Asylum.
Yeah.
The Midwest music scene back in the 80s, of course, we didn't know it at the time because we were living it. It was just the scene. But it's such a, you look back on it now and go, man, that was a rich vein we were mining at that time. It was great. And the drinking age was 20 or 18 in those days, too.
Yeah, that helps.
It changed when I just got out of college. So I was grandfathered in the being able to legally drink at 18.
Yeah. No, it is kind of cool, though, you know, because a lot of people, when they think of music, they think L.A., they think New York, they think Chicago, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, to see sort of these Midwest, like these sort of sleeper Midwest hubs, Milwaukee, Madison, Minneapolis, you know, Cleveland.
Yep.
Great music comes out of them. And sometimes you don't know it while it's happening. So
that's right. It's got a very salt of the earth feel to it. You know, if we would sit down and draw a chart of, you know, all these bands, there's a common thread that it's, you know, it's usually not big hair. It's usually not lots of effects. You know, it's usually guitar. And, you know, probably in those days, the most wild songs we had was like Head East, Never Been Any Reason, and REO Riding the Storm Out with that. You know, otherwise it's two guitars, you know, it's verse, chorus, verse, and get out kind of stuff. And that's just, it fits the Midwest ethos, I think.
Yeah, really?
I really think it does.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And what do you think the dream is with Joey's song? When are you going to be satisfied?
Well, I won't be satisfied until kids don't have to go through what Joe went through. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. But there'll be incremental steps along the way because, and we could use all the time you have on this, the medications, even though medications have made great advancements in the sense for treatment, it's always been 1 in 3 people can't find relief from medication or surgery. And that number hasn't changed even with the advancements in medication. What has helped is that the side effects have decreased. But still, one out of every three people that has epilepsy doesn't know from minute to minute whether they're going to have a seizure or end up in the back of an ambulance, right? Yeah. So that sword of Damocles is hanging over their head 24/7, and that was the case with Joe. So my mid-range step is going to be getting that 1 in 3 number to 1 in 4, 1 in 5, yeah, 1 in 6, so that lives can be better. But the ultimate goal is that nobody has to worry about this anymore, that we can figure out how to make sure that people can live normal lives with many of the causes of epilepsy. So that's the most important one. But I will tell you the other thing is, my other goal is, you know, we've got so many cool people here that know lots of other people. So I've enjoyed every venue we're at, but there's a big football stadium here in Madison.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, and there's a few of those things. And someday, that might be my goal too, that we do this little song and dance show that we do and we get, you know, 60,000 people instead of, not that I'm not pleased with 2,500 people, believe me, I'm over the moon. But yeah, you ask about, you know, long-term goal. So I don't think even though they would hold more people, I don't think I could ever have it at the Big House in Michigan just because.
You know, I mean, there's you got to have your standards.
Well, we know what Ann Arbor is, right? She's a what, right? So, so, you know, that's part of it as well.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you,
Charlie,
very much.
Thank you for coming, amigo. And
absolutely,
thank you for putting us on the map. Thank you for letting me tell my story to everybody,
oh,
too, man.
Oh, my gosh. I appreciate you including me. This is super cool, man. Thank you.
You bet.
Special thanks to Mike for including me in Joey's Song this year. And for more information about the event, head to joeysong.org and hope to see you there next year. For my next interview, I got to sit down with the band that also shared my dressing room for the benefit, Portugal the Man. We talked about similarities and differences between Alaska and the Midwest, and of course, Summerfest, which is the greatest music festival of all time, if you're asking me. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. Here's my interview with Portugal the Man. You've been in Madison now a little bit, and you've been here before, Wisconsin, you know.
Sure.
Top three differences between Alaska and Wisconsin.
Well, it's interesting. The part of Alaska that we're from has a lot of folks that were originally from this neck of the woods.
Isn't that funny?
It was a FDR New Deal, Great Depression deal.
Really?
So a lot of Minnesugans and Wisconsinites came. Is that the demonym?
Minnesugans?
It's a lot of like farmland and long sunny summer nights and, you know, potatoes and a lot of lakes. So I think it was like there's lots of land up there. I know you farm folks have had a hard time. It's the 1920s.
Yeah.
Steinbeck's all their age.
Yeah, right.
Go up to Alaska.
Stuff. Yeah. And then Alaska also has got plenty of hunting and fishing.
I didn't answer your question. We're talking about the similarities, but you asked what the differences are.
Well, you know what, though? It's funny you bring up the similarities because I do think Alaska should be, and I've said this on a different podcast, but an honorary member of the Midwest. But is that, you know, is that like, should the Midwest be an honorary part of Alaska?
We're all part of Canada.
Okay.
We're West Canada, you're South Canada, it's all Canada.
I suppose that's the case.
Just let them have it.
How does Alaska and the place you were born and come up influence the music?
Entirely. Yeah. The Alaskans in this band go to Alaska with any excuse at the drop of a hat. I think we have to. I think if I don't go to Alaska at least a couple times a year, I get weird.
Yeah.
Because it's a very different place, and there's a lot of different Alaskas within Alaska.
Right.
As there are in Wisconsin, I'm sure.
Sure.
Right?
Like, yeah. I've been to Sitka, you know.
Okay.
And I'm sure that there's an assumption as soon as I said that, like, oh, this guy. If you say Sitka, what does that mean? That's kind
of
like...
That's southeast. That's one of those parts of Alaska that you can't drive to. And that's a very specific kind of different part of Alaska. We have a lot of friends out there. Shout out to Nicholas Glannon. Shout out to Lakota Harden. There's a lot of very cool people in Sitka. But no, like that's just a perfect example. Like we were born and raised in Alaska, and I never made it to Sitka because I couldn't. I didn't have a boat or an airplane. So we were beholden to the roads.
Yeah.
But there's parts of Alaska that I'm sure a lot of our buddies in Sitka haven't been to, or maybe they have. I don't know. There's just so much Alaska.
There is so much Alaska. But I guess, like, what are the things that that kind of the place you're from kind of brings into the music?
We're just, like, surrounded by mountains. And we grew up with wildlife that you never take for granted. Like we were, when we were coming up, waiting for school, waiting for the school bus, there'd be moose around just snacking on trees. And that's just normal. That's just something that, you know, is happening.
Yeah.
You don't get that in a lot of places. You don't get that in a Target parking lot.
Right.
Outside of Alaska. It's just, it's wild. And, you know, everything's just bigger, more wild. What do you got? Oh, he's reaching.
Oh, he's got some.
Wait, do you guys have moose down here? You do?
No, we don't. Right? Well, no. No?
No?
Well, no. We have deer.
Deer.
Yeah.
Are they aggressive?
Well, deer, you know, deer will frick up your Corolla. I'll tell you that right now.
On yeah. Purpose,
I, yeah, on purpose. They'll run out in the middle of the road and just, and then they'll just do that to mess with you to watch you swerve. Now, if you see a moose in the road, much different than if you see a deer. You're going full bore toward a moose. What do you do?
Go faster.
go faster. You're trying to go under it.
No, seriously, what do you do, though? Because if it's a deer, you just hit it. A
moose totaled my dad's truck and went through the window. They will probably survive the wreck, and you probably will not.
Yeah, so you have to swerve for a moose.
I was always brought up, and maybe this is just my family's philosophy, but they're like, do not swerve, never swerve, hit the brakes, try and stop. But if you swerve, there's always ice on the roads, and you're better to die by moose than die of a rollover accident.
I suppose.
On some godforsaken highway in the middle of nowhere.
Go out with some honor.
Yeah.
You know,
die
speed
like
into that sucker. Yeah. No, in Wisconsin, though, they say don't even slow down, because if you slow down, the car goes down and then the antlers go right into your face.
There is, there is a philosophy in going under.
Okay.
Yes. You know, I was being serious.
Really?
Yeah. You do not try to stop. I mean, you definitely don't swerve. I mean, that's the thing that we're taught growing up in Alaska. I don't know if it's the icy roads or whatever it is, but yeah, I mean, that's our experience with moose. I mean, we had one moose crush our van.
Really?
And it just came right in. My mom had tried to slow down, so we just kind of hit it, and it went in. The other time I had a moose, we were going fast enough that it flew over us. So that's
Holy smokes. My plan
of attack every time is go under it.
All right, wait, when you hit it and the moose was donezo, was the moose done, you said?
No.
Oh,
sadly.
Moose.
I mean, they're so big, man.
They just get hurt.
They just... Sometimes they'll just run off.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be pretty messed up and they're out.
All right. If you do see a fresh one on the side of the road, you guys, you know.
Subsistence, baby.
Yeah. All right.
It's a thing. We don't, but some do.
Some do. Is that frowned upon? Because here, if you see a deer, it's frowned upon to leave it.
I mean, there's a bureaucratic process to get the subsistence permit and to take that kill. And people do. That's... You know, 1,000 pounds of food.
That's a year and more than a year.
Yeah.
You know, do it upright.
Well, a bleak conversation.
We went straight to, you know, moose and deer deaths, you know, but it's one of them things.
I got an F-150 in the Northwest now, and, you know, they just turn into a fine red mist, the deer.
Yeah. I know. Pew. Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Rest in pieces. What brings you guys to Joey Sung? Who got you into it? Who told you about it? What inspired you to come?
I mean, there's a few different avenues. We're old buddies with Butch Vig, and just meeting Mike and doing Summerfest in Milwaukee this last summer.
Summerfest is great.
That was the first time that we really kind of made a reality of it. And, you know, Mike was so pumped just talking about, like, you know, his connection with Dax and the Cheap Trick and the Nielsen Family Trust and, you know, Fountains of Wayne. And we just kind of started talking about music. And then before I knew, you know, any of Joey's story or any of the back history to it, he had me sold on, you know, the people that were going to be involved. And now that we kind of got into it and we get the personal connection with epilepsy, you know, John's daughter, struggles with epilepsy and something that they caught early, but it's definitely a huge part of their life. And it's something that I think probably affects more families than I ever realized, but it's not something that I hear a lot of people talk about or you know, play in support of or know much about. So like anything else, if we're doing something, I think it's usually because there's a connection or we want to know more about it.
Yeah, super cool. You talked about Summerfest in Milwaukee. You know, it's where I'm from. Summerfest is everything, you know?
Yeah.
And we think it's a pretty cool festival. But, you know, you see a ton of festivals. So how do you rank Summerfest in terms of all the other festivals?
Very cool festival you guys got over there. It was like, I was one of the wildest crowds I've ever seen at a festival. Loose.
Yeah.
Wild. Yeah. Loud. Ready to go. And we played late, too.
Oh, so, did you?
Yeah. Things were crunchy and ready to go. Man.
That's awesome.
It was great. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun. You got the lake breeze coming off. You know?
We had kind of rehearsed, you know, like we went back into our practice space and we woodshed and kind of wrote a different set that we were excited to try out for that summer and, you know, some other material and some kind of like down tempo stuff. And then we saw the crowd at Summerfest and we're like, nope,
yeah,
we gotta come out and play the heaviest rock and roll set that we can do. And I mean, that's just the vibe.
That's funny. I do that a lot comedy-wise. Like, if you're going, you kind of have an idea of what you're going to do. And that, like, tonight, I don't know exactly what bit I'm going to do at all. But
I think we're good at not being good at preparing.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing. Like, we try and remain as context-sensitive to the situation as we can. And even coming to this thing, we knew we had 20 minutes, but then we started doing rehearsals yesterday and everybody else was doing wild covers and, like, you know, just like legacy sort of Jack FM style cover tunes. And we're like, oh, shoot. Hope.
Everyone's doing well, fun. Well positioned hope there. I like hope. That.
Let me just scooch on by and write some covers really quick. And so we're going to do a little blend. We're going to do a half and half thing, but we didn't know what we were going to do until we got here.
Yeah. I like that. It puts you in a different mindset, too. Can you
do that in, like, comedy?
And yeah, you definitely go in and you can suss out pretty quick, and then you change it around, you know. You kind of have a running set list in your mind with comedy, you know.
I have no idea how comedy works.
It's just like music, but a lot easier, I think, you know.
I would say the opposite.
Would you? Well, as someone who's a subpar musician, I'll say the opposite, and then that's very Midwest of you, too, you know. That's good.
A contrarian in the corner. You're not even on camera right now.
What? Oh, geez, Louise.
I don't want to be on camera.
Okay, fine. No, you're not.
Yeah, he's over there. Are.
Yeah.
Well, don't try and be funny. Just be yourself.
Just be yourself. Yeah, that's good advice. That's really nice. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate you. It'll be fun seeing you out there. Huge thanks to Portugal the Man for joining us on the Cripescast and giving tips on how to avoid a car crash with a moose. Make sure you listen, give that another listen before you go to Alaska, folks. And check them out, PortugalTheMan.com and at Portugal the Man on all social. Be sure to download their music and buy their albums as well. My next interview is with the lead singer of Soul Asylum and Minneapolis' own Dave Perner. Now, he was born in Green Bay, okay, but he grew up in Minneapolis. Dave says that even with all his time away from the Midwest, he still loves to come back. And, you know, I tell you that, folks, doesn't that just hit you right in that brat soak ticker? I tell you what. Jeez Louise. Anyway, he and I kind of shoot the breeze. And, you know, Dave's got some jokes. I'll tell you that. He's got some jokes. So take a listen.
Yeah, Am I supposed to talk into
that microphone or no?
Is this for my voice?
That's for your voice. Sounds really nice in there.
Oh, yeah, I sound good?
Yeah, you got it, yeah. Has anyone ever told you had a good voice? You know?
No, not that I remember.
Well, you got a good voice.
My folks just said, whatever you do, don't go into music.
Did they? Were they supportive of it?
No.
No?
Well, they were probably right. They're like, getting into music is going to be hell.
And has it been hell? Has that been accurate?
Well, let's just say I would make it terrible with just about anything else. Anything else I would do worse. I'm sure they wanted me to, you know, be a dentist or something. But did you know dentists have a higher suicide rate than singers in rock bands?
Gee, and that's why it's a good thing. I'm also going to say, if you were my freaking dentist, if you were looking at me, you know, I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to deal with the cavity.
They cause a lot of pain, and I cause a lot of pain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I could see that. Did someone shut the door? Oh, look
it's
at that.
It's been said that sometimes my songs make people cry because it's that bad.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. Now you're just doing the Minnesota thing, you know?
Is that the Minnesota thing?
I don't know. I'm just you know, throwing...
Mm-hmm. Like, Milwaukee thing?
Well, it's the same thing. It's, you're putting yourself down, you know, a little bit, set the bar low, walk right over it.
Can you imagine how, like, easy stand-up comedy must be?
Seriously, think about it.
I like it when people hate me, but it's usually because of the other guys in the band. That's the way I rationalize it.
No, that's a good way to do it. And it's their problem.
But I have actually often said to myself or anybody that might be listening to me that stand-up comedy is the only thing that scares me more than standing up there with a guitar, because you ain't got the guitar.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that is true. But you know what? Standing up there with a guitar scares me more than stand-up comedy, because I am a slightly below average guitar player.
I'm not really down with the whole crossover thing.
Okay. All right.
I won't tell you
about my second album coming out.
I don't like comedy music.
Yeah, well, it's not...
Like, there's a couple good Cheech and Chong jams.
Yeah, there's some good ones. You can't say you just don't like any of it,
King
can
Tut
you?
Was okay. It was okay, pretty good.
So now you're just listing off good ones now.
Because the rest of it's kind of...
There's a lot of not-so-great stuff. And it's like it didn't quite do it. It's tough. It's tough to write a punchline in a song and
like
have it
hit. How Dimitri Martin...
Yeah, Dimitri Martin.
Doesn't he uses the guitar in a pretty good way.
What about Bo Burnham? You like him at all?
I have some friends that are crazy about him, and I can't really understand it.
Okay.
It's too Broadway for me or something.
Yeah, it's very theatrical.
Yeah.
You don't like Broadway?
Well, I guess it depends on what it
is. I suppose. It's like you don't like movies?
You know, Fosse kind of thing, and there's just that. Bad thing. It's a little over the top for me a lot of the time. Musicals, particularly. But, you know, I love Broadway, actually. I love seeing about half the things that I've seen.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's like any other art form, just like musical comedy.
Yeah, I shouldn't go to musical Broadway shows. I did see Bring the Noise, Bring the Funk.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
Tap dancing, and it was unbelievable. It was great. It was really, really good. Savion Glover, he's like the best tap dancer in my knowledge of tap dancing.
Wow, yeah. Which,
so they do this kind of hip-hop tap thing, and it's great.
That's great. I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's worth it.
What role do you think where you came from influences your music? Like Minneapolis, right? Or was it out on the outskirts? Or was it Minneapolis proper?
Well, you kind of, the royal you.
Yeah.
you grow up and you think it comes out of a radio from way far away. And that's always, I listened to, I was that kid that, there was a song playing on the radio in the car, I would go, Mom, I'm just going to sit here until the song is over. And she'd leave me in the car to listen until it ended, and then I could get out of the car.
Oh, wow.
I got to follow Joel Hodgson. I mean, like,
I mean, that's, yeah.
Oh, not that funny.
Today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything you're going
to
say funny right after
that? Upstaged by a stand-up comedian. Well, no, but I tell a lot of jokes in my set. I turn around, I look at the band, and I'm like, oh, that guy's tuning, or that guy's fixing his snare drum. I'm on. I tell a minute or two joke.
I will say that's a huge art form right there. You know, the jokes between the tuning
I'm thinking
jokes.
What's going to fit this time space?
Right. Because you have to know.
Then I say something like, yeah, I was out in front of the venue today and it was a drug dealer. He sold me a pair of shoes. I don't know what they were laced with, but I've been tripping all day.
Okay. Do you write that?
Now, I'm a cover. Cover comedian, pretty much.
That's great.
Like the oral history, if you will.
Yeah.
I can tell you the logic joke. I can tell you the moth joke.
Moth joke's good. It's a great one.
And I believe that those are passed down. Like I was watching the new Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's
good
actually
for you.
Good. It's by Guillermo del Toro. You know that guy?
Yeah.
It's pretty good, and it sticks more to the pre-Disney interpretation. So I started going, who wrote this story? And it's unknown. So I don't know. It's
really? The origin of Pinocchio is unknown?
Mm-hmm. Just like jokes.
Wow. I'm going to Google that, by the way.
I'm pretty sure Norm did not make up the moth joke.
Oh, there was a story about the moth joke or
you ever
something.
Heard Super Dave Osborne tell a joke? He's a catalog of jokes.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's great.
I'll have to check that out. I honestly do think, and I, nobody quote me on this because I could Google it, but it's probably a waste of time. I think Norm heard the moth joke or a different joke like that from his taxi driver.
That's how he tells the joke.
Oh, that's how he tells it?
Yeah. Oh. Because I got a joke. You know, I was riding over here.
Oh, yeah.
My
that's
driver
why.
Told me, and it's Conan or whoever, and he goes, where did he get this material? And he goes, well, my driver told me the joke. But he, whenever he's on his thing on his show, people always go, who wrote these? And he goes, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, he's the guy who sets the bar low all the time and then walks over it.
That's my man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling my usual jokes in England, and I would hear this, like, sort of, in the crowd. And if enough people do it, I kind of like it.
You like bombing. That's a very Norm MacDonald thing
kinda,
right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's terrible. And I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah. You know? That's an art form right there. I feel like, you know, you're not much for comedians crossing over to the music side, but I think, you know, you could cross over to the comedy side. I'm in favor of that. Yeah. Hey, you're a Midwest guy. Do you consider yourself kind of a Midwest guy? You know, is that kind of...
Yeah, I lived in New Orleans for 20 years, but it's good to be back in the Midwest. Yeah, I can't help it.
What is it about Minneapolis? If you like the music, there's been so much amazing music that's come out of that city. What do you think it is about that city? That
long, long winters.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can figure.
Yeah.
You're just... We're shut in. I think that's why we handled COVID better than most places, because
right.
we're used to being shut in.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's just a big, long February.
Yeah, you got to do something. Might as well start a band.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. How old were you when you first started playing?
17, I think.
17?
Yeah, I started out on the trumpet, then I moved to saxophone, and then I moved to guitar in high school.
Who was the first guy you looked at, or gal, whoever, and you're like, I want to do that?
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. I was a huge.
But I was like, I want to do that, but I can't. And then I heard the Ramones, and I went, oh, I think maybe I could
that.
Do that. Maybe
that's cool. What is your favorite Hendrix song?
Off the top of my head, right now, I'm feeling Crosstown Traffic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kazoo on that track.
Isn't that crazy? What's that one? And I think where it starts off kind of like it's in a bar. You've kind of got that bar sound in it, the Hendrix song. I can't think of it. God, this is the worst, Charlie. Remember
All Along the Watchtower?
No, it's not All Along the Watchtower. It's in a tone. Feel right.
I gotta go check this out. I think Miles is singing with his wife.
Oh, this was fun.
It's been a pleasure.
Hey, this was it. Is that how we wrap interviews? Like, I start trying to think of a Hendrix song. You're like, I gotta think of an excuse here.
No, I tell you another joke.
Oh, okay. Oh, do you want it? Tell it to me.
Well, I don't know. Let me see. You know, I'm trying to size you up.
Yeah.
See what kind of a joke you might like.
6'1", 195.
This bear walks into a bar.
Okay.
And he goes, I'll have a gin and tonic. Bartender says, what's with the long pause? And the bear says, well, I've had these my whole life.
Dun-dun, dun-dun, shh. Oh, bringing it full circle. Thank you very much. That was super cool.
See, I told you Dave had jokes.
Hey, folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. We've had 5 or 6 beers and only one fish.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Well, it's a month after that toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, and now another Norfolk Southern train derailed Saturday, just 200 miles from the East Palestine disaster site, same state. No toxic spill this time, but it's putting a renewed focus on rail safety. Ohio Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown on ABC's This Week.
When you lay off a third of the workforce, you clearly are compromising the work that those workers do, and they simply can't keep up with the safety inspections.
Ukrainian forces in the key eastern city of Bakhmut now said to be vulnerable to Russian attacks on three sides. The chief of the Wagner Group calling on Ukrainian President Zelensky to abandon the city. Tens of thousands of Israelis took to the streets Saturday protesting against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's planned judicial reform that opponents fear would weaken the Supreme Court there and limit judicial powers. Former Maryland Governor Larry Hogan announcing he won't run for the 2024 GOP presidential race, saying he didn't want to have a pileup of candidates running. This is ABC News.
Aha! Leprechauns and Wisconsinites have a lot of things in common. We both look good in green. Chicks dig our accents.
You're cute!
And we all love what's on the other side of the rainbow. Get your pot of gold when you sponsor our hourly weather forecasts on your local Civic Media station.
That's 24 ads per day. One ad every hour, right before the latest weather forecast.
And right now, the prices on these premium sponsorships are slashed up to 50%. But you must act before March 15th to take part. Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
Next up is my conversation with Chris Collingwood. Great dude. Also shared the green room with me and Portugal the Man. Super fun guy. We had a great conversation about music, the mechanics of music, songwriting, all that sort of stuff. So here is Chris Collingwood.
Which one's your favorite pick?
I don't have a favorite pick. The most important thing for me is that it's brightly colored, so when I drop it on the stage, I can pick it.
Oh, yeah? Do you lose a lot of picks?
I do. Yeah. I used to. Not so much anymore. I used to drink a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And then no more on that.
Yeah.
On the pick, are you a heavy or a medium?
Heavy.
Okay.
You guitar player?
I play guitar poorly.
Heavy or light?
You know what? I honestly don't play with a pick. I just kind of finger pick it, or I kind of use my hand. It's a very imprecise kind of thing. Is that typical?
I see that, like Adam from Fountains of Wayne used to do that because he started on piano and bass, which I guess the more serious bass players play with their fingers.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and then, you know, the Ramones, of course, play with a pick.
Heavy pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was, like, the first person that you saw do music and you were like, yeah, you, and that's going to inspire me? Do you remember?
Ah, the Beatles, man.
Like, was it the Beatles?
Yeah. I went to an all-boys boarding school, and it was so uncool at that school to listen to current music. So at the time, it was like Michael Jackson and Madonna and stuff, but I was more into... like the cool kids had album collections like the Moody Blues and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And like, I guess I owe going to a prep school, like learning about classic rock.
Yeah, that's kind of, which was at the time you did it, the counterculture thing at the boarding school, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, that's cool. What Beatles albums your favorite?
I don't know. That's a trick question.
You can't pick one?
How do you do? What's your favorite Beatles
Rubber
album?
Rubber Soul.
Really?
No, I just picked one.
Yeah, that's,
I just figured
like
since I asked you that and you said you can't ask that question, you fired it back at me. I figured I should have an answer.
No, that's like Rubber Soul is like a transitional album, I think. They were on their way to Revolver, right?
So yeah, for you, do you hear a song through like melody first, lyrics first? Like what's the driver of the song?
People ask me that a lot, and I wish I had a process.
Damn,
that
first
I
of
could,
all, I thought that not to interrupt
original
you, I
question.
That,
yeah,
God, this sucks.
I'm going to answer it anyway.
All right,
I don't know. I literally have no idea. Like I. It's improvisational, and then I get to a point where it starts to feel like something, and then usually like a line, the words and the melody kind of come out at the same time. Maybe it's been brewing underneath. I don't understand how people write words and then set it to music, or vice versa. I don't understand how that works. I think if you're going to get like really beautiful happy accidents, that's not going to happen. It kind of springs forth, and you just have to know when you got something.
Like observing, like from a comedy perspective, I'll like see something, observe something, like write it down, that's a joke or whatever. Do you do that with like a song too, of like you, okay,
Perfect example. The other day I was like, this was an old pizza. Now it's a pizza me.
Is that in your set?
Freaking cool, huh? No. Why? Do you think it'll bomb?
I'm just thinking it could be. No, you can't write songs about pizza. That's just not cool. There's nothing.
But what if it's like, so it's kind of like maybe a John Prine thing where it's like kind of funny, but quippy and like kind of throwaway. But you're like, wow, he put that in a freaking song, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. John Prine. You know, he had a way of doing things.
Yeah. Okay. Great interview, Charlie.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is totally my fault. I love John Prine, but I mean, you can also tell that, like, you know, the way country writers write a lot, and I wouldn't even call him a country writer, really. He's more like an American folk icon. I don't know what he is. You know, it starts with a title most of the time, and then you build a story around the title. This is something Adam from Fountains of Wayne always wrote that way. Like, find a phrase or something that suggests something else, and then play off that and, like, make a story about it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Pretty much like the difference between the way that Adam and I worked was very similar to the way McCartney and Lennon worked, except better.
Yeah.
Than them.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Are you not going to elaborate on that? You're just going to say you're better than the Beatles and just direct a role?
This is I'm making this official on your podcast.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
How have you enjoyed the Midwest so far, Madison?
I love these people. I love this whole scene. I love Butch and just Midwestern nice is a thing, right? It's a real thing.
I think so. I've apologized to these guys a lot being in their green room. Actually, you as well. So sorry also.
Yeah.
Sorry. What's a question that you would like to receive?
I like when a musician interviews me and they talk about pieces in the song, like where did that thing come from?
Oh, you like it when they get
the details.
Yeah.
It's a little harder for me to talk about just.
You like getting in the weeds of it.
I mean, part of the fun of doing like this is seeing these guys and like other acts and like hearing what they're doing and talking about it and learning from other people. And
yeah, I know what like gets me excited about, like, if you write a good joke, or if you write like I do some songwriting too, mostly bad, but if you write it good, it like gives you this energy, you know, that like just keeps you going for the next day or whatever. Like what's kind of that equivalent for you if you have that, you know?
I mean, for me, it's probably more frustration. Like, if I have a really good idea and I know it's a really good idea, and then I sometimes just sit with it forever. I was talking to Freedy about this yesterday. And he just put an album out. It's a great album. And he told me that those songs like started 10 years ago. Like, how do you write a song for 10 years? Like, literally. And then he's like, no, all the albums are like that. Like the one, like the next album will be songs that are also, you know, 10 years old that he started 10 years ago. I don't understand how that works.
It's like the barrel-aged whiskey. You know?
I mean, it's also, I'm just not the same person I was 10 years ago. Like, you grow and you change and you're into different things. Like, 10 years ago was like, you know, if I started a song 10 years ago, I don't think I would be in the right frame of mind to pick it up again now and finish it. Like, it just wouldn't work.
Put a different thing on it with 10 years more of experience or whatever. It wouldn't.
I mean, maybe, or just like, sometimes I just listen to like different kinds of music and I'm into something different. Like, I don't know, like early on, I kind of went in a country music phase, which I kind of think is like boot camp for songwriting. You know, you just learn like the basics and how it's supposed to work. And then, it's good to learn that stuff, and it's good to just develop an instinct for like the way chords go together. And like a lot of musicians don't know the math of music.
Right.
So like we're rehearsing and like we're talking about that too. Like some bands go, okay, we're on the root, that's one. And then they're calling out the chords and they go 4, 5, 6. But like there's different things for different people. I think that if you get too analytical about it, you lose something, because it's like you're thinking about the math too much. And it's also like it's a habit of listening. And there's people who, when they hear a song, like I'm one of them, you can't not hear the chord progression. So like if it's that's the first thing I hear before the words. So I'm just picking, my fingers are unconsciously just doing the guitar chords.
Okay.
So, and that just, I wish I didn't have that analytical part, because if I could shut it off, like I know people who don't know that G to C is the same as A to D. And so every time they play that thing that's the exact same thing but a step up, it sounds totally new to them, because they don't know that it's the same relationship between the two chords, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that kind of question I think I was asking earlier that I keep coming back to, I think it's interesting. It's like, because when I grew up listening to music, I would like listen to Bob Dylan a lot, which kind of, I think, messed up my musicality a little bit, because I was like, I think Bob Dylan's a very lyrically forward driven person, those kind of got any kind of does these weird syncopations with the things that sound a little chaotic.
You mean his vocal delivery, you mean?
I mean his vocal delivery, but also like I feel like he was, the way I heard it is the guitar was like second, it was back, so I would go like almost lyrics forward and my rhythm was all, I feel like, messed up because of it, you know. What I mean,
were we talking about you playing a Bob Dylan song?
No, I'm just me trying to write like Bob Dylan. I mean, I don't know, I should not use me as an example, like I say jokes, but you know, but I just think it was interesting how it like ingrained into my brain. But it sounds similar in some ways with what you're saying of how like the math of it is kind of ingrained in your brain first.
Yeah, and the important point of for me about that is I wish I could turn it off, because there's people that I know that don't know anything about music theory, and every single thing they do surprises them because it sounds different and they realize it's the exact same thing they just did. So it frees you up if your brain is not, and sometimes like you're writing and you're thinking about your hands, and that's another thing, like just trying to work on a song and I'm trying to picture where it's going to go and I cannot stop thinking, I can't turn it off. The subconscious posing of my hands on an invisible fretboard, right? So I'm always thinking of that. And sometimes, like lately, I've just started air drumming while I'm trying to write, just to keep my hands doing something else so that I don't have the thinking about the guitar while I'm working.
Well, this is super fun. Do you like this interview or not really?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
What are you going to say then when I leave?
I'm going to say that was the best interview I ever had.
I'm working on it.
All right, huge thanks to Chris for coming on. And finally, next up, although he is a Bears fan, he's still a really great guy. From Rockford, Illinois, here is Miles Nielsen from Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts.
You're in Rockford.
Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah, are you a Bears fan?
I am a Bears
fan. Okay, and that's the end of this interview, ladies and gentlemen. So you've got, like, I feel like you got a very interesting life. What was it like growing up in Rockford, kind of, you know, with everything going on with your family and all that?
Small town, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the grocery store and like all of a sudden you're hounded for, I wasn't hounded, but my dad was hounded for autographs. And then they're like, people are like, saw your dad at the store, man. I didn't know he likes to drink Blatz. Like, well, yeah, he drinks Blatz so we won't drink his beer, that kind of a thing. You know, he was smart. He was like, well, when I had Rolling Rock, the kids would drink all the Rolling Rock.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I figured I got Blatz. So Blatz would just, they would deter the, you know, us from drinking it. After a while, you get desperate, you'll drink the Blatz.
Yeah.
So we started drinking the Blatz, and then it just backfired. So he just quit drinking altogether. So he's like, hasn't had drinks for like 27 years, because I think we caused him to stop drinking.
You made your dad stop drinking.
That's
you were just cleaning him out.
It was, you know, it was really for him.
What's kind of like your music journey? Like, obviously you grow up with, you know, your dad being who he is, and that's got to influence you to a degree. But then how do you, like, as an artist, sort of separate yourself, and do you ever, you know?
Well, I think in my youth, I was like, you know, dead set on like, I'm going to do it my way. You know, I'm not going to use my dad's name. I'm not going to do this. And then I realized, like, you know, my vision of how easy it was to just get in a tour bus, you know, you just go and you just play for a bunch of people.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wait, you have to write songs and you have to learn how to write songs, craft songs, and then hopefully write songs that someone else other than yourself and your mom are going to like.
Right.
And then you have to figure out how to make those songs into, you know, like, recording is an art in itself. So it's like, you know, just, I was a stubborn kid who, you know, I'm going to prove them, you know, whoever them are, you know, I'm going to prove them wrong. And you're like, well, what does that mean exactly? I don't know. So after a while, my ventures in choir in high school, in the music program, then I went and I was a voice major in college. And then I studied music. And then I studied music in college. And then when I went to another school, I studied the technical side of recording. And I got a degree in recording engineering. And then out of college, I started recording with Steve Albini in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Who he's done, you know, Garbage, Page and Plant, a band called Nirvana.
I've heard of them.
And that was like such a cool 3-year experience of working with tons of independent artists coming through, record labels coming through, and then throughout that path, I started playing guitar and in a band with my brother Dax, who's here today. And that was about 7 years of touring in that band. And we gained some popularity, you know, like being in Chicago and like selling out the House of Blues and things like that. We're like, we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of, and then we made the record that we wanted to make as a band.
Yeah.
We lost like about 3/4 of our fan base because, you know, we were like, we made the rock record we wanted to make and no one liked it. So we sort of disbanded that. And then I decided, well, I should probably just be the boss of my own thing.
Yeah.
And, so that's what I've been doing for the last like 14 years is Miles Nielsen and Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts.
It's awesome, man.
And
like when you do that though, when you make one, do you really feel like you lost people on it?
Or oh yeah,
because it's kind of like I'm thinking like as a video, you know, I make videos. If you make a bad video, not a lot of people see it because it doesn't get shared as much. I mean, so bad news, it doesn't get a lot of views. But the good news is, it didn't get a lot of views, you know? But with music, it's something different because you spend so much time crafting an album. And then, so it that can happen, I
Well,
guess,
the problem was, I think it was expectation.
I see.
So, like, our fans had this expectation of the record we were going to make. And then we made the record that we wanted to make. And they were like, well, we were expecting different. So
I see.
We're going to go follow someone else now.
isn't that goofy how that kind of thing works, you know? It's not, well, I don't know.
But,
I guess,
you know, we like, in hindsight, like, listening back to the catalog of that band, you know, we put out 3 albums in a 7-year span, and my favorite one is the one that we wanted to make for ourselves.
Yeah.
So the one that we still, you know, if we get together and play, that's the majority of what we're playing are the songs off that album. So it's like, you know, I mean, in the long run, it's like, well, you have to do what you like, because eventually, like, no one's going to end up liking you, and you're going to fade away, and or maybe not. You could be, you know, you too, and stand the test of time, or you know, all these other legacy bands, and some of them still lean on their old songs, and some of them continue to grow, you know. So I'm always impressed by like a guy like Tom Waits, who's like, his career is like, or Tom Petty, like, you wrote great songs the whole time, not just like, oh, your first 3 records were amazing, you know. So I don't know. For us, it's just like we're just Midwestern guys who like to work hard.
Yeah, and you kind of get that sense too. I mean, and you're still based in Rockford.
Still based in Rockford. Yeah.
And have you always been based there? Or did you go around for
a little bit?
I've
traveled around a bit. I traveled out to L.A., down into Florida, Central Illinois for a little bit.
And why did you decide to bring it back home?
It's a good question. I think children.
Yeah, they'll do that.
As a comedian, though, like, you know, do you feel like, for instance, in this situation that we're in with all these different artists and people, do you feel like you're constantly needing to be funny?
No. I don't. Yeah. And
that's nice.
Yeah, because I, you know, I do my stand up stuff and that's up there and that's funny. And I do like the videos and those are funny. But when those are off, then, you know. Then I, you know, mentally.
What is your mental disengage? How do you do that?
I do like some meditation and all that stuff. I just try and exist though, you know. And I don't like.
Is there a hobby that you really enjoy?
Yeah, I like biking. I like fishing, and I like bird watching.
Nice,
all great things.
Yeah. All great, and also like great things in Wisconsin today.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm a big outdoors fella. I just got to do it more. You know? Yeah, you just gotta.
That's how I feel. I'm a basketball junkie. So,
oh, nice.
I'm the second oldest guy in the league.
Okay.
So like,
what's your position?
I'm shooting guard.
Nice.
I'm like the out of the 10 guys, I'm usually the 8th guy off the bench. You know, I'm like number 8. Like, you know, I'm not starting, but you know, like if you need me to come down and knock down a couple long distance shots,
you'll make it happen.
Because I ruptured my Achilles like 8 years ago.
Oh shoot!
Playing basketball, and like my whole game was like, before that was like a slasher and a get to the hoop, and now I'm like, I'm good.
I'm gonna hang out here.
I just if I'm open, hit me.
Everyone's got their time.
Do you get to Bucks games much?
I love the Bucks. Yeah. Are you a Bulls fan?
I'm a Bulls fan, but I enjoy basketball. You know.
Yeah.
I enjoy the Bucks.
Bucks are cool.
I feel like, is it Olnhauser? I don't know how you say his name, the coach.
Yeah, you did pretty good.
It's Wisconsin, but like he fits that team so well.
Oh my
God. Just the look and everything. I'm like, that guy would be sitting at Jim's County Line on Highway 26, like having a Stroh's, you know, or having a Miller High Life, you know, like any given Saturday.
Yeah.
You know?
That's hilarious. Yeah. I that's a great observation about him.
I love the Wisconsin look of him.
Yeah. You know, and
I like kind of just Milwaukee, Rockford as well, Chicago. I mean, Chicago's kind of a higher class situation there in a lot of ways. But, you know, kind of these blue-collar towns, yeah, are there's something cool that comes out of that from an artistic standpoint.
It's like Milwaukee is a place for me that, rather than going to Chicago, like my wife and I will seek out things in Milwaukee over, and we'll head to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, like it's rare that we go to Chicago for things because it's like Milwaukee's a lot easier.
Yeah, I know.
But also like just, I feel like there's a little, like there's like more of this like honest grit to Milwaukee.
Totally. Yeah.
That I love, that like, we'll just, you know, it's like I'll get on Hotwire and find these like, and Milwaukee's got a lot of hotels.
Yeah.
So like we'll go up there and just stay for a night or two and just, you know, you can go to the Riverside or the Paps and catch something cool. You can go to a Bucks game.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's hockey there. Like there's tons of cool stuff.
Great parking too, as you said.
Great parking.
You know, that should be our take on Milwaukee. Yeah. You can find parking.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's great.
Should not be overlooked.
It's great parking. Yeah. Dana, I didn't think about that much.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250C Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.